Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Moment with Self. I'm your host, Dr. Daniel Sadiq, bringing you another hour of transformative information. My work as a psychotherapist allows me to witness the human urge for growth and its continuous yearning for security. I often come across people who are under professional, relational, economical, and emotional stress, and what I have found often in common among all of them is being stuck in their old patterns and their own rigid belief systems. The way out of stagnation and repetition of old habits, in my understanding, is getting out of our comfort zones and doing something different. Once we allow ourselves to look into our past and present patterns and then realize if those patterns are bringing us happiness and success or maybe not, then we are able to choose our direction. Transformation is happening all around us in every second of our lives, just because the people and the situation around us are changing constantly. However, personal transformation is happening only when we take ownership of our choices, decisions, and that's when our destiny is determined. Kevin Shepherd is a person who took a chance and signed up for a huge transformative journey in 2008. In the fall of 2008, shortly after Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad called for the destruction of Israel, Kevin Shepherd, a flashy point guard from the U.S. Virgin Islands, accepted a job to play in one of the world's most feared countries, Iran. Kevin, who was born in 1979, which is coincidentally the same year that the Iran's Islamic Revolution happened, is a multi-talented athlete. He played basketball and soccer at Jacksonville University on a scholarship. While he was pursued by the global soccer powerhouse Manchester United to join their youth team, he chose to play professional basketball. He played in South America, Europe, China, and Israel before joining the Iranian Super League, which was in 2008. Kevin stayed in Iran through 2011 and became one of the most successful and most popular players ever to play in the Super League. Well, since becoming a dad in 2011, Kevin has taken time off from professional basketball to stay with his family, and he's currently running a non-for-profit youth league called CBA, which is Choices Basketball Associations, Inc., of which he's the founder and the president. Kevin's goal is to break the cycle of violence in his native U.S. Virgin Islands by providing a positive environment for kids through after-school programs and basketball. He traces his dedication for positive change back to his time in Iran, the experiences he had there, and the strong personal relationships he formed have made him a different person. In particular, he credits three women, all fans of his former Iranian club, A.S. Shiraz, for introducing him to their own rich culture and to Iran's pressing social issues. He noticed these differences and also the similarities in some of the issues that affect the whole world, especially women's rights, human rights, inequities in the world, and injustices. Those three women facilitated his further transformation into a global citizen. As Kevin was about to start his basketball contract in the Iranian Super League, he was contacted by husband and wife filmmakers Till Schauder and Sarah Nujumi to make a documentary about his journey to Iran. Till Schauder, who is the director, co-producer, cinematographer, and the co-editor of The Iran Job, got his start in Germany, where he wrote and directed two award-winning films. After earning a government grant for the arts, he made his U.S. debut with the romantic comedy Santa Smokes, which won several international awards, among them Best Director at the Tokyo International Film Festival and Studio Hamburg Newcomer Award, which was received there. His other film, Duke's House, premiered in the Tribeca Film Festival. With his producing partner and his wife, Sarah Nujumi, their company Partner Pictures writes, directs, shoots, and produces for TV and film. T. He is a graduate of University of Television and Film in Munich. He teaches film classes at NYU and has been a guest lecturer at various other campuses. He's also been invited to serve on film festival juries in Munich, Tribeca Film Festival, and Bahamas. Till's new film, The Iran Job, follows Kevin Shepard as tensions are running high between Iran and the West, while Kevin tries to separate sports from politics. As Kevin's unlikely alliances with the three unspoken Iranian women, it turns out that his apartment becomes a safe haven, an oasis for free speech. As they ended up discussing politics, religion, and gender roles in Iran. Kevin's season in Iran culminates in something much bigger than basketball, which is the uprising and the subsequent suppression of Iran's reformist Green Movement, and eventually the powerful prelude to the sweeping changes across the Middle East and in the wake of the Arab Spring. With the wars in Afghanistan and Iran, and the world's attention focusing on Iran's nuclear ambitions eventually, a fresh look of the Iranian people is really important to be perceived in the world, and it will be very helpful to join cultures and further transformation in the worldview of all viewers. The Iran Job will open up at the Lamley Musical Hall in Beverly Hills and the Lamley Town Hall Center on Friday, September 28th, and I have invited Kevin and Till to join us and share their experiences in making this film. Welcome to A Moment with Self, and here you go, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Great, I'm really glad that you guys took the time, and I'm really interested to understand, Kevin, it really takes guts to be an American and step into an unknown world. What were your expectations when you decided to do this?
Well, first of all, I don't know about guts, and I don't have that much grit of expectation since, I was coming from the American hemisphere over in the Virgin Islands and this side of the world. I can only go and everything I hear about Iran on the news, how they have weapon of mass destruction, and there was the axis of evil, and they want to blow up Israel and so forth. So my expectation was basically if I go over there and it's like what the news said, then I would go on the plane and come back home the next day, go play somewhere else. But if I go over there and experience something else that's pretty much different that nobody has ever explained to me, then I will be in a situation where I can really experience something else that a lot of people on this side of the world have never experienced. So that actually turned out to be the case, and I'm very happy I did.
So what was that experience like with the people in Iran? Did you feel respected? Did you feel accepted?
I was very respected and very accepted. First of all, as you guys will see in the movie, I like to say that the Iranian people love black people. So, luckily I'm African-American, so I was very accepted among mm-hmm. Iranian people. But just living and playing with my teammates and getting to know the three young ladies in the film and really getting to in the depth of what they got to go through day in and day out, it only humbles me and humbles anyone who see this film that people are basically people. And the fact that they showed me so much respect coming from the country that their government is saying down with USA, and they have so many different signs saying USA is the devil and so forth. The fact that I'm American coming over there and the people are so much opposite, it really shows me that the people are so much different than the government perspective. And that's one thing I definitely learned.
Did you find the Iranian culture as a respectful culture generally towards everyone, or was it just towards you because you were somebody famous on a team and kind of winning games for them?
Well, at first, it was really strange to me because, they have something over there by the name of Taruf. Mm-hmm. A lot of American people over here probably don't know about.
To stand on ceremonies, I guess.
it's crazy. Because once I go over there and I try to buy anything, these guys will get so passionate, they will never let me spend my money. yet I am more than willing to spend my money because in many cases, I make more money than a lot of my teammates. So I have many examples. We go out to dinner, and I try to pay for the bill, and they would just get in my face and say, "Don't you disrespect me. This is my country. You're my guest. Don't you ever do that again." I mean, it just humbles me so much. I wish I could just take that experience and bring it back to us in America and in the Virgin Islands. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked. But
well, I guess if you do that here, you kind of looked upon as, what the hell are you
yeah,
doing?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
And how was this experience in regards with your teammates and, you know, the other people around you on your team? Did your job as a professional basket player get affected by this experience in Iran? How did that change or not?
You know, as far as basketball, I have to honestly say I did get a little bit affected, not for the bad, for the good, because it actually made me play a little bit harder. I mean, you just got to understand the mindset of a journeyman. When I go to all these different countries, and I've played in so many different countries, as you mentioned, I just want to go there, do my job, get my money, and get out. That's it. I don't want to mingle with the locals, mingle with the people. But Iran was so much different that I had no choice but to get involved with the people just because of what they was going through that I had no idea about. And the way how they led me into their personal lives and to see that they were fighting for so much change with, like you mentioned, the Green Movement and so forth. You know, the people itself in Iran really wanted change. And once I saw that, I was like, well, you know, this right here is really bigger than basketball. And it only empowers me to even play even harder for them because I see their fight for something that even myself, being an African-American, you know, just 60 or 70 years ago, we was fighting for the same type of respect in America. So it really relate to me, and it only make me go harder for them.
So in other words, their struggle became yours as well. So you were really part of the team, not just the team that you played upon, but the team that Iran played against, you know.
Definitely.
The ruling
Shiraz.
Enemy.
Yeah, I became Shiraz.
Right.
They Shiraz, they Iranianized me or Shiraz me, you can say that. Yeah.
So how did you handle the differences? I'm sure you noticed a lot of differences, you know, with your own habitat, with your own culture, with your own understanding. How did you understand them? How did you manage them? And, you know, what were the degrees of these difficulties?
Well, it had a lot of degrees of difficulties because, first of all, coming from the American society, once we play in an arena of sports, it's only winning and that's it. We don't remember second place and we definitely don't remember losers. So it's all about winning. But once I got there, it gave me a sense of feeling that because I was on a new team and this was their first year in the Super League, that if they play good against some of the top teams in the Super League, that it was really it was okay for them to lose but play good. And we had a clash there because whether I lose by one or I lose by 50, it's still a loss to me. So I don't know what losing good means. In my culture.
So losing was kind of accepted.
It was more accepted
right.
to them because they did well. And doing well does not cut it in professional sports, really.
That's so a huge difference.
That was a big clash.
Right.
You know, and I really had to dig deeper into their psyche and try to find out why they really think this way. And I think once I started getting into what they was going through, and they start opening up to me in terms of the Iraq and the Iranian war, and they took me to the places down south of Iran, and they showed me where all the biological weapons hit Abbas and all those areas where nothing today is still growing. And I started to see the historical struggle that these people are going through night in and night out. Any little bit of goodness in their life is something good. Because they're fighting so hard, and it's like, wow, this their world had a psychological block on their game, and I really had to connect with their lifestyle to understand why they think like this, why they play like this, and why they reacted like this,
and why losing is okay.
Yeah, and when you see the film, you would realize that I tried to change that. You know, you have a very highly emotional part in the film where I'm screaming on the bench, like, because the coach wanted to finish fifth place. I mean, here
you kicked the garbage.
I mean, here we're playing for first. We're playing against the champion, and we're playing for a championship. All of us are equal, 0-0. But we came to practice the next day, and nobody's practicing. Everybody's happy. They already said we're going to lose the first round, so let's go play for fifth place. Like, what is this?
Wow.
So that was really striking to me, and I tried. The movie depicted a scene in it that I was really emotional, screaming, "I don't want to finish fifth place. I don't care about fifth place. You guys can finish fifth place." So
what preconceptions did you have that either changed or they were affirmed?
Well, a lot of preconceptions. First of all, you know, I was one of the few who used to make those silly jokes about how they was riding camels in desert and probably eating camel soup and stuff like that. And, I mean, I went to Iran for almost 4 years. I only saw one camel my entire life. I was asking where are the camels.
That's right.
It was really ridiculous, you know. And the stuff that we hear and we get fed, you know, through the media over here,
true.
It can poison your mind. So that really changed me and humbled me to stop my ignorance when it comes to making statements like that, you know. And the other thing that you know, I previously mentioned was the fact how the people was just so you know, so warm. They just so hospitable. They were just so, I mean, I've never met
giving.
I've never
really
met
giving
people like
people.
That anywhere in the world. I have not to
well,
this day.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, even you go to somebody who has nothing, they have one room and they have like five kids and they have just a piece of bread. They would love to just give you that piece of bread,
yeah,
and keep you warm and keep you there. So it really doesn't matter what they have or not. They just
definitely
want to give it to you, you know.
They just do whatever it takes,
right,
to make their guests feel welcome.
Right.
And that's something that really it hit me in my heart, and I tried to take that with me and bring it back to this side of the world.
Well, so let's get to the friendship that you had with those three women that we mentioned briefly. How was this relationship affecting you, and what understandings did they bring to you?
Well, you know, a lot of things they did to me that really opened my eyes, because once I got in touch with the three ladies, I realized how intelligent they were, and they was able to speak English very well, which I really,
yeah,
needed. And the fact that they introduced me to their personal struggles. You see, the Iranian people have their struggles, but the women even have another level of personal struggles. And the fact that they can open me up to what they have to go through, wearing the scarf over their heads and you know, not being able to excel with their high level of education, you know, because of the male pressures in their society. It really opened me up, because coming from America, seeing women are so successful here in America, it's just a shame that these women don't have that same opportunity to get to the next level.
I'm wondering if this understanding of these women allowed you to change your views when you came back to your homeland, U.S. Virgin Islands, or to the U.S. Did that make any change in you?
Well, definitely. Just being with them and, you know, understanding them, it just made me even much more better listener in my life, with my relationship with my wife.
Right.
And it only can, because when I look at my wife now and I can see everything she has, you only sometimes I just meditate, and I'm like, what if she was over there? She wouldn't be able to excel the way she is now. And the fact that she have all this freedom, I always tell all the time,
which we take for granted.
Yes, you know, I always say, you don't want to be in Iran, baby. You'll be covered with sheets and all that thing. You'll be crying. So you better take advantage of what you got right now. So, you know, I take that experience from there and I bring it home and, you know, I share it with her. And it just made me a better person, a better listener, a better all-around person.
Well, from my remembering of the film, you also grew really good friendship and relationship with these guys on your team, a couple of them especially. So how was this male bonding with these guys who are from a different country, from a different culture.
But basketball really is with guys in sports, you know, basketball is like that bridge that can bring anybody together, no matter what country, you know, you're from. Once you have that one common ground, which is sports, it's really easy to make friendship. And it was twice as easy because my team was so young that this was probably the only team that I've ever been on that they just gravitated to me because of my experience. And normally when you go overseas, you get that kind of it's not visual, but you have that kind of hate being coming from another country, taking a local spot, making the amount of money, and they're not. So a lot of people's going to be jealous. That's just a fact of life. But this team, I didn't have that. And it was really easy to make great friendship with these guys because they were just so unselfish and so open to me that I can see the genuineness of them.
Great. So let's get Till busy a little bit. Till.
Yeah, he's sleeping.
This experience for you must be very unique also on two different levels. First, you married to a Persian woman, and then second, you got to see Iran, you know, and just after this revolution and hear stories about before revolution. I'm wondering how this picture that you had in your head changed or got affirmed when you went to Iran for the first time, and what really got you to do this film? What was your motivation?
Well, I should say that in my youth, I grew up playing basketball growing up in Germany. And interestingly, one of my first teammates was Persian. His name was Afshin Barami, if you happen to listen. Hello, Afshin. Mm-hmm. And he was a really good point guard, coincidentally. And then over the course of my youth in Germany, I always had Persian friends. Every few years, some Persian kid would pop into my life. So there was some sort of thread in my life. And then, of course, I married Sarah, and that just reinforced my interest in Iran. And so when I read about the handful of Americans who take contracts to play in Iran, right away I felt like, you know, there was an opportunity to tell a story about diplomacy through sports, and a story that would merge a lot of my interests, basketball, Persia, or Iran, and also international current affairs. So that's why I took the leap of faith to delve into a documentary, which is a very long process.
So, you know, just understanding different religions and cultures for you, how does this film represent you, and what was your intention for making this film?
That's a good question. Well, my mother always likes to tell the story. When my birthday comes around, she tells the story how I was born. I was born in Seattle, Washington. And back in those days, the ladies would share a room with six or seven other ladies. And she always likes to say that her neighbors were an Indian woman, a Pakistani woman, an African-American woman, and a Caucasian woman, basically all colors of the world. So I've always been interested in different cultures and always been curious about other people, and what Kevin does is exactly what I used to do when I was traveling in my youth, as to just go to different places and try to explore and get to know them. So that's what attracted me about that story. It's sort of like a classic hero's journey, you know, a hero going somewhere far away to you know, go into battle, basically, and when things go well, he comes back with a trove of treasure, which is usually knowledge.
So, I guess what I'm trying to understand is that, then what do you intend to show with this film? I mean, you have really gone through a lot to bring this film together. You've traveled to Iran, you've even been in danger in Iran, so you've gone through a lot, and I'm curious to know, what was your motivation at the end? I mean, what was your intention of, what do you want to show to the people of the world by this film?
Most of all, that people are people anywhere in the world. And Kevin, I think, even has a line like that in the film or something similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to understand that regardless of what our cultural and religious background is, by and large, we share the same aspirations and hopes and dreams for our lives. And if if we take a leap of faith and engage in dialogue, we will learn. And with knowledge comes an understanding that everybody is to be appreciated. So before you, for example, make a drastic decision like invading another country or bombing another country, you need to know the people of that country. I feel in America we don't always take the time to get to know the other, and that was the idea behind this film, is to really give a Western audience a chance at a look into Iran, which is a country that's often represented as being the kind of the lion's den, the worst place to be stuck in as an American especially.
So I guess this film is bringing the people of the world closer to each other, especially to the people of Iran.
Hopefully. I mean, we've had interesting experiences with the film. One of them was a Kickstarter campaign that we did 10 months ago to raise finishing funds. And it was really amazing how people from literally all over the world contributed to the completion of the film. They came from every corner of the world. And right now we're doing another campaign to raise funds for the release. And the same sort of phenomenon is happening again, where, you know, last week we had a big backer from an Arabic country. He's not even Iranian, just a guy from the Middle East who thinks that a film like this can help. 2 days later, a lady from Minneapolis, pledged a large amount for the same reasons. And in between, we have all these smaller donors giving whatever they can swing, and they come literally from everywhere. And that's very encouraging and inspiring.
Heartwarming.
It's very heartwarming. It's actually, I've never experienced anything like that. And then when we go to festival screenings, for example, you get the immediate audience reaction. That's, of course, also amazing when people come up to you afterwards. I had a guy in Texas the other a few weeks ago. We had a community screening in Houston, and this very sort of conservative old white guy who looked kind of like a guy who would ride a bomber plane himself came to me and said, "Thank you for making this film. I had no idea about these people, and I really appreciate getting to know them." And that sort of response is just worth all
beautiful.
The work.
So is there anything that you would have done differently in making this film? Do you have any second thoughts based upon where you are today and you're looking back?
I would have liked to have, had production funding in place before we started, so that it wouldn't have been such a struggle always to have to make the film and raise the money simultaneously. That's of course every filmmaker's dream. For the most part, I don't have a lot of regrets, because I'm really happy with the result. And filmmaking, at the end of the day, it's about what's on the screen in the end. Werner Herzog said that once, a famous director. He had constant battles with one of his actors, Klaus Kinski, who at one point even threatened to kill him on set. So the director, Werner Herzog, at the end said, "You know what? All these fights, all these struggles, they don't really matter when what's on the screen is beautiful." And that's why I don't really have a lot of regrets, because I'm very happy with what's on screen now.
Great. Is there anything that you would have liked to add on? Is there any message that you still would like to, convey with this film?
I mean, I think the overall premise and message came through. There are many individual scenes that I would have liked to keep in the film, but many, many things I had to cut, because you just can't make a 5-hour film. It has to be entertaining and tell a story and keep the audience's interest. So I had to say goodbye to a lot of scenes that I really liked.
So the two of you have made a beautiful friendship through making this film. How do you see this, coming together? Where did it really start, and how did this bonding happen?
Well, I mean, I...
Go ahead.
Well, at first, I hated him at first. There was no friendship there. He taped everything. I mean, he videotape me when I come out of the bathroom. I mean, it was very annoying.
No privacy.
Yeah, no privacy. But after a while, you know, he's taping every day. I got used to him, and he pretty much became part of my life and part of not just me, but Zordon and the girls. And we was able just to be ourselves. He never told us what to do, and it was pretty easy to just be in yourself.
That's great. So there is a certain trust that's required in any relationship. So how does trust happen? I mean, you just said yes when he approached you and he said, let's make this film. What prompted you to just kind of take that? It wasn't an easy thing to take on. I mean, in a country like that you could have been taken as a spy or, you know.
It wasn't, you know, I didn't really think about it that deeply. You know, my friends have their prejudice in their own, and they would always tease me about what camel do you take to practice and stuff like that. So this was a way for me to kind of show them how I am living and how the Iranian people is living. So I was like, okay, well, why not? So now they can stop messing with me about how I'm living and how they're making all these jokes about the Iranian people, which they knew nothing about. So I basically said, yeah, why not?
I look at this film as also like a prize for you, kind of something as a reward that you gain after being there for 3 years. Is that the feeling that you may have also?
I mean, the only reward I can say I receive is just being a better person internally. Mm. And even spiritually. I've always been a spiritual person also, but just being around, just understanding people and understanding that you cannot really just listen to everything you see and hear on TV. Sometimes you just got to take a leap of faith and go out there and see it for yourself. And that's what it makes me become. It makes me think, what about the next life?
Great. Till, how can our listeners help you, support you, and support the message of the Iran Job? How can we encourage them to participate in the worldwide promotion of this film?
Well, to those listeners in Los Angeles, it's very easy. Just come to one of the shows. The film opens next Friday, September 28th, in Beverly Hills and Encino, as you said at the beginning of the show. So that I'll be there for Q&As for the first 3 days. Another great way to help is by going to our Kickstarter campaign, and you'll find the link very easily by going to www.theiranjob.com, and then you'll see a big Kickstarter sign, and you press that, and you get to the link, and then you'll see all the rewards that you get for your contributions, and you learn much more about the project and its genesis, and you'll see a big green button that says back this project, and all you need to do is have a credit card and go through a very simple PayPal, Amazon process, and done. You're a backer of the film.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way that they can send more audiences to your showings, across the world?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, if you, find our link, find the website, find the Kickstarter link, sharing it on Facebook or tweeting about it or sending personal emails to your friends, that's a really great way to get people engaged. And, in fact, that's sort of how we found most of our backers is through word of mouth. You know, somebody sees it, likes it, and then recommends it to other people. Yeah.
So, do you guys have any messages for our listeners?
Good night and good luck.
Just basically go watch the film, support the film. Just understand that the film is not really about USA versus Iran or anything like that. It's just basically taking you into the lifestyles of the Iranian people, and hopefully you can follow me through my journey, and hopefully I can change some of the prejudice you might have like I did, and it made me a better person. Maybe it might even make you look a different way on Iran.
Great. And as someone who was born in Iran, I really want to appreciate both of you for taking your hearts and your souls to this country and bringing out what's the best in this country to the people of the world and allowing us to see these beauties through the lenses of your beings. So I really appreciate that, and thank you for taking the time and being on this program And hopefully we can see the success of this movie, World War.
Well, hopefully
thank
make a trillion dollars and Till will break me off of the mill. thank you guys for having
thanks,
me, really.
Thanks for having us on the show. We appreciate it. Thank you.